Hi, it's David Jennings here from melbourneseoservices.com, and I'm excited to share with you a fantastic interview that I've got lined up with Dale Beaumont, who's a business entrepreneur based here in Australia, and he's just got so much business experience and so much proof to back up his entrepreneurial successes that it's got to be seen to be believed. He's literally got 16 best-selling books that have sold over 250,000 copies worldwide, and he's been featured on different print publications, on radio, and been on television shows like Sunrise, The Today Show, Mornings with Kerry Ann, 10 News, and numerous other ones. I mean, you can find out all about them on his website. But for me, Dale's name just kept on popping up in my social circles. I had different friends in mastermind groups who'd mentioned Dale, who'd spoken on his stage and who'd gone through some of his different material, and all of them had agreed that, look, Dale knows his stuff inside and out. Not only that, he's extremely passionate and very articulate with the way that he presents his material. So with such high recommendation, I was pretty excited when I first started listening to the first presentation I'd heard Dale give, and it was the 7 tips to better business. Now, after going through it, I loved it so much, I thought I really need to interview the man behind it so he can share with you firsthand what it takes to build a successful business. So just let me, without further ado, welcome Dale to the call.
Yeah, happy to chat, and really looking forward to giving some value to people that are listening.
Thanks again, Dale. I really appreciate your time. I know you're incredibly busy, and I'm just as excited to go through these 7 business tips because I know how much value they can add. And I want to get an understanding of how you came up with them and how to apply them in business, because the way that I see it, it's almost like they're the big rocks in business. You know, you want to think about putting the big rocks in place first, and then you let all of the small rocks fall around it. Because once you get the most important things in place, it just makes all of the other decisions that much easier. So if we can just jump straight into it, I'd love to find out a little bit more about how they came to be, and maybe just a little bit of an explanation on each and how people can apply them in their own businesses.
Sure. Yeah, happy to have a chat and start to dive into the detail. But just, you know, kind of by way of introduction, you know, having been in business for sort of 12 years, there have been a few things that I've done right, but a lot more things that I've done wrong. And I suppose these were put together based on reflection of looking back and seeing, you know, what things really kind of, you know, flew and were a big success. And what are other times whereby, you know, I had a couple of years where things, I put so much effort into things and I so thought they were going to work, but they just didn't. And reflecting, I've kind of since understood there's a few fundamentals, and if you break those rules, then it is really tough to succeed in business, no matter how hard you try. And so some people just think, I'll just try harder, I'll just work harder. But if you're the business is fundamentally flawed, it's really like trying to push a boulder up a hill. You're working against human nature. You're working against the kind of time-tested principles that build a successful business. And you might get there, but boy, it'll take a lot of work and decades before you even get a result. But there's a much better way to go, which is to work with human nature and to work with kind of gravity, so to speak, and follow those principles that really, really work. And whenever I see now kind of being in a position where I help and assist other business owners, you know, when something is kind of not going right, they just say, it's not working for me. It's normally because they're breaking one of these kind of 7 main rules that we're going to talk about. And so these, for me, come up time and time again in my own kind of business journey, but also many, many other people that I work with. So finally, kind of out of frustration, a little while back, I said, that's it, I'm going to do a talk. I'm going to basically share what I know and put it into these 7 steps and give people some really kind of, you know, meaty questions to think about so they can basically hold it up like a mirror to their, you know, their business up like a mirror and say, you know, ooh, you know, is this the business that I, this is going to help me to fulfill my my goals, personal and financial goals, and kind of ask yourself those tough questions. If it doesn't stack up, then, you know, it's probably time to make some changes, and so you can move on to bigger and better success. So that's kind of the introduction and the setup, and I'll pass it over to you and we can get started whenever you're ready.
Yeah, well, it's quite interesting. You talked about these business ideas, these business tips that really do apply to all business. And I mean, I've seen the presentation and I've got a bit of a list here of those seven things. I'm almost thinking the best thing for me to do would be I'll just go from the top and I'll read down, and then if you can just give us a little bit of insight into each one and how people can apply this idea straight into their business, or if they're thinking about setting up a new business, how they can apply this thinking that's just going to set them up for success. So, I mean, the first one is this idea of making sure that they target a hungry crowd and find a hungry market that they start marketing to. So maybe you can just tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, a lot of people, they, you know, when they come and tell me their business idea, they go, I've got this fantastic business idea. It's wonderful. It's amazing. And nobody is doing it. And, you know, kind of my having in the beginning, I was like, wow, that's great. You know, when I was very inexperienced, but now I kind of a bit more mature and I go, well, there might be a reason why nobody is doing it. and that's because, you know, it may not work, or that there isn't a market for that. If there was a market, people would already be buying it. And so the fact that there's nobody out there that's currently doing this means that there's nobody out there currently buying that. And really what you're going into is uncharted kind of waters. And there's a, you know, there's a saying that you know, many of us have heard of before, which is the early bird catches the worm. However, I think there's a more powerful principle in business, and that is the second mouse gets the cheese. And that is that nobody, you should not try to go into a business where you're like a pioneer and where you're trying to kind of build the market for something. You should find an existing market and sell to an existing market where there are people, and ideally large volumes of people, that are already spending money on your product or service. Because if you have to convince people about why they now suddenly need something that they didn't know that they wanted before and no one was ever buying it before, that is tough going. It's the difference between selling people what they need and what they actually want. And I've got this sort of saying, and it's been very powerful, and I only discovered this, you know, later in my business journey, and that is, if you sell people what they need, you'll almost always fail. If you find out what people want and give it to them, you'll almost always succeed. So you need to find the hungry crowd. You've got to find out what people want, and ideally, you know, they're already spending money on it anyway. So don't get into the business of selling people needs. People need this, they need this, they need that. If they're not currently buying it, then they don't want it, and your job is going to be really, really tough. And so you've got to find a hungry crowd. Find out where there needs to be volumes of people that are already spending money on that. Otherwise, it's going to be tough. And like going back to what I was talking about before, about that, you know, the second mouse gets the cheese. You only have to look at some of the biggest businesses on the planet today to know that Google didn't invent search. You know, there were many, many search engines before Google. They just came along, and there was a market for search. People were searching stuff and thought we could do it so much better. Steve Jobs didn't invent the iPod, or didn't invent the MP3 player. The MP3 players were out years and years and years before. So he came along and thought, how can we make this better? Because there was already a market, there's already people spending money on it, but he just then, you know, took it to a whole new level. So what you want to do to become more successful in business is rather than trying to be a pioneer, which is really, really tough, is find an existing market where people are already spending money on something, ideally where there's large volumes of people, and find a way that you can do it better and you can do it differently to everybody else. And so there's the kind of the explanation for find a hungry crowd. And yeah, if you want to go against that advice, I'm really, really sorry, but you're going to struggle and make your life so much harder.
Interested to get your thoughts on, depending on where someone's at, because the importance of finding that hungry crowd, and you make the really important distinction that they've actually got cash, because you want to find someone who can buy your product and service. I know you deal with a lot of business owners that already have existing business, and they've already got products and services. A lot of the fundamentals we'll go through, I think, would make a fantastic filter if you were getting into a new business. Always interested to find out how you would apply this thinking to, let's say, a pre-existing business if you'd already sort of started heading down a track.
Okay, if you've already started heading down a track, and I suppose, you know, you've got a ask yourself, is do I feel like this business is really easy, or do I feel like it's hard? And I don't mean that business shouldn't be easy, but if you find that you're having to do a lot of convincing, or you find out that price is a constant objection, you're pushing a product on someone because they need it, but they don't really want it, they don't really understand why they should spend money, let alone the premium price that you want to charge, then maybe you're barking up the wrong tree. Maybe you're, and it normally comes down to you're either, you got the wrong market. Like, you got a market that just is, there's a guy that I know that was a personal trainer, great personal trainer, but he was basically selling to 18, 19-year-old kids that just want to get ripped. Now, no matter how good that he was at his business of personal training, there was only so much that he could charge because these guys didn't have a lot of cash. They were 18, 19, and all the money that they spent was on protein powder and supplements. They didn't have any money to pay for, his service. And so he was barking up the wrong tree. He had the wrong market. Great skills, nothing wrong with who he was. He was brilliant. But there are a lot of other people, like maybe business owners or executives or maybe actors, that need to get fit and are happy to pay a premium price and have disposable income. So it's either change your market. It might be to change your message. Maybe your messaging is wrong. Maybe you're trying to sell needs rather than wants. And maybe, the way that you're packaging it is not quite right. Or maybe the methodology that you're using. So it's normally either the message is wrong, the market's wrong, or the methodology is wrong. And methodology is how you do what you do. You've really got to find, the magic kind of, whether all those things come together in the right way. And it does take a little bit of time, but the more that you can work with these principles, the easier it will become.
It's quite funny how many people in business don't clearly identify that target market up front and know what it is, so that they can then put the right message to that market and speak their language. It's a great, exercise to float into the mind of your prospect and imagine what it's like for them, and then put a message that, effectively, I can't remember which copywriter said it, but this idea of meeting the conversation that's already going on in the client's mind. So getting clear on that, making sure that they're the target market, and then I suppose you move into your second step, which is really important. I think a lot of people seem to go incredibly wide. They'll try and please everyone and have this product and service that hits everyone. I'd love it if you can drill down into your second tip here, which I think is absolutely key to building out a successful business.
Okay, so principle number two is about going deep and not going wide. Now, what we mean by, and basically, in order to explain it, I'll basically tell you a story about the entrepreneur that I met called Brad Sugars, who's built a very successful business called Action Coach. It's actually the largest business coaching franchise on the planet. I had the opportunity to sit down with him at his head office, and I was interviewing him, and I asked him a whole lot of questions. And one of the questions I asked him, I said, when is the right time and the wrong time to diversify a business? And he didn't go straight into his answer. He basically said, well, before we can I can answer that question, we need to define what diversification means. And I go, okay. He said, because diversification almost always fails when you set up, develop a product or a service that sells to a different target market. That almost always fails. But a business almost always succeeds when they sell an additional product to the same customers, and ideally a product or service that they've asked for. So in technical terms, he said, I don't really call that a diversification. I call that more of an extension product. So what he basically was saying is, diversification is bad, extension products are good. So sometimes people, what they do is they get into a business where they're selling a product or a service, and they develop this customer base, and they go, oh wow, now what I'm going to do is, I've been good at say a hairdressing salon, for example, and now what I'm going to do is, I'm going to go start a catering business or something along those lines, or I'm going to now sell something else. It could be child mining services or something like that. Now, if you go out and have there's a different target market, and the two are actually different, or if you've got some people that are interested in weight loss and another group of people that are interested in say the stock market, they're different people. And so what you're going to have to do is recreate everything and try to find a new target market. But it's much easier to sell something. In fact, marketers tell us it's 10 times easier to sell something to someone that's already bought from you as opposed to going out and finding a new customer. So what you should always do is talk to your customers, your existing customers already, and because they're already warm to you, they're already responsive, they already bought from you once, chances are they're going to want to buy from you again as long as you did a good job. And so say, what else do you need? What are your other problems that you're having right now? What are your frustrations? What are your challenges? What's keeping you awake at night? What do you wish you had that you don't have right now that will help you become more successful or save you time or save you money and whatever? And they will tell you. And that's the only products or services that you should create is ones that your customers have asked for and their existing customers, so you're not having to go out there and create a whole new set of followers and a whole new set of fans, because it's going to take a lot of more time, a lot more money to build that, and much better to go deep as opposed to going wide.
I imagine with the number of businesses that you work with and entrepreneurs when they're getting started as well, you probably see this quite a lot where you've got entrepreneurs, it's almost like they're searching for this holy grail, this system or this business that's going to work well for them, and they just keep on jumping from one thing to the next, and it's like they're just digging all of these little holes but never really going deep into something and giving something enough time to expand and actually have a chance for success. I don't know if you've seen that phenomenon, if you've got any thoughts on, you know, why people are jumping from one to the next and they never really go deep.
Yeah, there's a few reasons why people kind of jump from one thing to the next. One is that they, you know, their business might not be making enough money, and so rather than fixing the existing problem, I think it's easier to go out and start a new business because they've got that mentality, the grass is greener on the other side. But the truth is, the grass is greenest where you water it. And, you know, you need to actually, rather than always thinking that someone else has somehow got it better and, wow, look at that person over there, they're making money, I'll dabble in that, or I'll try this, I'll try that over there. It's much better to stick to kind of what you're doing and actually, you know, make that work and go deep. And another thing is boredom. You know, unfortunately, a lot of people, a lot of business owners, they do get bored very quickly. And, you know, if you really want to build a successful business, at some point you're going to have to to actually not get sick of repetition, because once you crack the code, then basically it's rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat, keep doing the same thing, but then sort of scaling it and getting volume through that entity, whether that be a product or a service. But unfortunately, a lot of people love the startup phase, they love the creative phase, but the moment kicks into mundaneness, then they run for the hills. And in fact, but the funny thing is that's where all the money is made. So it's a real shame that people are always on to the next thing and they never finish what they start.
I see it all the time, and I suppose I've been guilty of it too in the past, where you kind of jump and it's not until you actually sit in one place for long enough and start to work on that business that things really start to hum. I saw like another one of your business insights in regards to that as well, and it kind of feeds into what you were talking about, the hungry crowd and making sure that they've actually got money. Your third tip is this idea of having less clients, which for a lot of people sounds a little bit counterintuitive, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Yes, so some people think, you know, it's all about getting more clients, more clients, more clients. And, you know, yeah, certainly, you know, it is important, of course, to get more clients, but it's important to get more of the right type of clients. And I learned this from a guy called Lee Farnell, and he was a guy that was basically selling primarily training programs to corporates. And he was just, you know, working really, really hard. He had hundreds of clients that he was kind of doing kind of work for, and it was just sort of burnt out and thought, look, something's got to change. And so what he did is he took all of his clients, put them into an Excel spreadsheet, all the names of the clients. In the next column, he put down the amount of money that those clients had brought in for him in the last 12 months. And then basically what he did is you just use the kind of little button at the top to reorder them and prioritize them from who made me the most amount of money to who made me the least amount of money. And at the end, he had like a total of adding everything up and then the grand total. So what he did was, I'm just going to play around with this, and I'm going to take the half of my customers, okay? And I'm going to basically, if there's 100, take 50 of them, and this is the bottom 50, and I'm going to delete those people, delete those customers, and see how it changes the bottom line, the grand, you know, total at the bottom. So he did that. He got rid of 50% of his customers and found that his income had only dropped by something like 17%. So he lost half of his business, you know, half of his customers. His income had only dropped by 17%. And so goes make you wonder, now I've just got half of my life back. Now I've just got all this time on my hands. What could I do? How quickly could I make that 17% back? And I believe you could probably make that back within a week, maybe 2 weeks tops, as opposed to 26 weeks that you know, where you've earned that that money. These are 50% of your clients, and so and simply because there are, if you just have a lot of clients, you'll find that half of your clients are really just wasting your time. Sometimes people, you know, do the A, B, C, and D, and C, D clients you probably lose money on. And what you really want to do is try and move those clients on as quickly as you can, and actually try to get more of the clients that you want, because you don't want to have, you know, thousands of clients. You want to be having the right type of clients. And so, you know, what you want to basically do is, you want to identify who are the clients that have made me the most amount of money, profile those clients, find out who they actually are, and say, how can I get more of them? And obviously you can do the profile of the customers that are making you the least amount of money, or where you're actually losing money, in fact, if you really were to measure it, and say, okay, time to move those customers on, give them away, give them to your competition. That's a really smart move, because they can and lose money for your competitors, as opposed to having those customers lose money for you.
How does that sort of play into the idea as well of like higher priced products? And as far as, like, you know, you can either go into like something like a Bunnings, where you're selling a lot of very low priced product, and I mean their whole sales spiel is the lowest prices are just the beginning. That's one strategy, and it can work for some companies, but then on the flip side as well, you've got other businesses that particularly charge, you know, a higher end and go for that premium client. I don't know if you've had any experience or comment on that.
Generally speaking, if you're a small business owner, as most people are, and small business maybe say less than $5 million in turnover, competing on price is a really bad strategy. You'll go broke if you compete on price if you're a small business. The only way that you can compete on price is if you're a major multinational like Officeworks, or, you know, a Bunnings like you've mentioned, or, you know, a big airline can absorb it, because they can go years and lose money, because they've got enough of kind of a business structure behind them that they can support that with investors and other things that they have, to get enough market share to then slowly creep up their prices, and then they start to make money. Whereas small business owners, you know, you can't afford to be losing money for 1 month, let alone a couple of years. And so, you know, never get into a price-driven business. You know, if you're a small business owner, you've basically got to start charging a premium price. And rather than lowering your prices to make your customers kind of happy, because they'll always want to get the cheapest price possible, you know, set your margin, set your profit, you know, where that needs to be, your prices where it needs to be, and increase your sales and marketing skills so you can then sell at that price point. And, you know, when you really kind of, you know, understand what the customer wants, you'll be surprised at how their decisions that they make have very little to do with money. You know, and I only have to look at, you know, one successful business in the last few years, which has been one called Crust Pizza. Mm-hmm. You know, pizza, they sell pizzas for $24, and three shops up from, you know, where I live, there is a Domino's Pizza which sells pizzas for $4.95. So they are five times more expensive. But hardly anybody, I know, look, goes into the Domino's Pizza, because who wants to arrive at a party? Who wants to come home with Domino's? Because what is it saying to them? And what is it saying to all their friends? This person is cheap. This person, you know, person's cheap, and they don't really care about kind of quality. And so no one wants to do that. So everybody pays more, and happily pays more, because they know they're getting better quality. And it also says something about who they are. that they care about quality, that they want to eat healthier, that they don't want processed stuff, that they don't want to be served by a, you know, pimple-faced 15-year-old, rather, you know, the hot girl with the big boobs type thing. So, you know, it says a lot about who you are. So less clients, more money, charge a premium, and we'll figure out a way to have customers happily pay for it, because they will, as long as you sell and market.
And I mean, you touched on a few important things there about the way that that product or service is presented, and making sure that the marketing's right, and you know, making sure that you're adding value so you can then help to justify that premium price. So, and like another one of these tips that you've got is this idea of the way that that's packaged and the way that you bundle things together. Interested to get your thoughts on the way that fits into the picture.
Yeah, number four was, you know, about selling in bundles. That there are so many people that sell, you know, one product over here and one product over here and one product over here. And there's a saying in marketing that is, confusion leads to no sales. The more options, the more choices you give people, the less they'll actually do. And so what you want to be doing is limiting the number of products that you have. Like we spoke about before, limiting your customers. And that's kind of contrarian thinking. And now I'm saying limiting your products, have less products. You know, so for example, you know, look at Apple. And I was on the Nokia website the other day, and if you can go like Nokia.com, went there before, and there was something like, I can't remember the number, but it was ridiculous. It blew me away. It was like there was something like 150 phones, like a huge amount that Nokia sells. What does iPhone sell, or Apple? One, the iPhone. That's it. So they've limited their products to make people's buying decisions easier. Limit the number of choices, and makes it easier for people to buy. Another business that has gone nuts is Yellowtail Wines, which is huge in America. They have one red, one white, that's it. And they're one of the most successful wine companies in the world, Australian business that now exports, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of wine to America because they've made it easy to people to buy. So limit your products, but then, you know, bundle up. If you can bundle, you know, your profit margins will go through the roof. So, you know, if you're selling paint, you know, rather than having people come in and just buy paint, you know, as they come to, you know, when they're kind of looking at the paint, you might want to go up to them and say, look, do you mind if I ask you a few questions just to make, you know, make sure that you're getting what you need so you can do the job properly? And some person goes, sure. And you have a checklist there, and you can go, okay, you're doing a large area, you're doing a small area. Do you have floor mats? No. Do you have like, you know, do you have a roller? Do you have a tin for the roller? Do you have, you know, terps in order to wash the paint brushes? Do you have a rack in order to, you know, hang out the brushes? I'm just making stuff up here, but there's probably around, in addition to buying paint, there's probably about maybe six or seven other products that could be purchased in addition to that. And so you could say, look, you can buy all these separately if you want to, but we have a special, you know, paint your house kit where you get, you know, 12 tubs of paint, I don't know how many you need, and you get this, 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 and it's normally this price, but if you get it all in one package, we're going to give it to you for this price, and just make people's lives easier, give them a discount, and people love to buy in bundles. You know, why do we have the, you know, the Happy Meal, you know, all of the value meal and everything like that? Is because people prefer to make my life easier. The fewer decisions that I have to make, the easier it is for me to buy.
I mean, that idea, I know Dean Jackson as well, in, they've got a great podcast, the I Love Marketing podcast. They talk about thinking about that target market and then thinking about what problem that they have that your product or service helps to solve, and then really thinking about that, that dream come true experience. And I like the way that you kind of wrap this idea of bundling that dream come true experience all in one, so it makes it easier. And that idea of fewer choices, just it makes sense. I think having more choices actually makes someone more frustrated as well, because then they end up thinking about the other choices that they didn't go with. But if you've just got one thing and you do it incredibly well, and it's that idea of going, like you were saying earlier, making sure that you go deep, not wide. When you're going deep and you've got less things to focus on, it means you can do it even better. So all of these business tips like intertwine, and it almost leads into your next business one, which is this idea of being the best, which I think a lot of people in business just don't do it. It almost feels like just another Me Too business, and there's nothing that really makes them stand out. How have you seen, and I mean, you've definitely done it in your business blueprint business and some of the other businesses that you've done, but how have you found becoming the best really differentiates you from the competition?
Well, I think, yeah, we're moving into a kind of a time whereby, you know, people, they want to work with people that know their stuff. They want to work with experts, with professionals. They don't want to kind of, you know, people are becoming much, much smarter. And so people don't like to pay for average anymore, quite simply. You know, people want to pay for exceptional. And so, you know, same thing why so many businesses now are struggling, like, you know, Domino's Pizza and other things, because people don't want an average pizza. They want to have, you know, the best possible pizza, and they're happy to sort of pay for it. And so very important that you are, you know, you can talk confidently about your business, that you know just as much as anybody else in your industry. And in fact, if you know more. So compared to everyone else in my industry, you know, how good am I at what I do? If you're just average, then you're just going to have an average business, or are you exceptional? And so really take the time to become really good and become the very best you can, and know as much as you can about your particular topic. So put in those sort of hard yards, and it doesn't have to, when I say hard yards, it doesn't have to take years. You know, you could spend 3 months studying something intently and become, you know, an absolute expert at it these days. There's so much information online, so many courses that you can take, and so many people out there that are willing to help you and give you free advice. You've got no excuse not to become a real expert in your field. Once you become, you know, the best, then you've got to make sure that that comes through in all of your marketing collateral, so people can see that. So maybe you're going to go for awards. Maybe you're going to write a book. Maybe you are going to get some incredible testimonials, maybe from some high-profile people. Maybe you're going to start to get exposure through the media. And all these things then combined, so somebody that's doing their research and says, okay, well, I want to you know, say I want to get my do an office, you know, fit out. They might type in office, you know, fit out or something like that into Google. There might be 10 different companies there, and they all kind of look the same and they do the same thing. But then they land on one, and this person's got a book about the 7 things you must know before doing an office fit out. They've got great testimonials. They've got they've written a book. They've got some national awards that are featured on the website. And then maybe they also have videos as well that kind of talk about their business and what they do. So instantly, and maybe they've got PR as well, all those things combined. So someone goes, wow, you know, if I'm going to work with anyone, I want to work with those guys, even if they're 10 or 20% more expensive. Clearly, these guys are the best at what they do. I want to work with them as opposed to everyone else that just looks pretty much the same. People don't like to pay for average anymore. They want to pay for exceptional, and there's no excuse for you not to be amazing at what you do.
A few things that you said there kind of triggered different thoughts and memories in my mind. There's a company out of New York that creates these handcrafted knives, and they came out with this video where the guy just tells the story about how he handcrafts each one and how each piece is just like an artwork, and they look magnificent, and they probably charge, you know, 10 times more than any other knife, but the story that's wrapped around it and the attention to detail that goes into the product really justifies that higher price. And he has positioned himself as the best person in his niche for creating these knives, and that allows him to charge the premium product. Now, you don't get to that position and be able to create that message without going deep into the particular business or whatever it is that you're doing. It takes time. All business has this lead time where you need to learn the ropes, and you learn the inside and out, and you collect all of the testimonials and the proof, and you get to a point where it's when the prospect comes to your website, it's almost like he can't be faking this. There's so much good stuff. For example, I mean, you lead by example, and that's definitely one of the reasons why I felt like I resonated with what you do, Dale. I mean, you go to your website, and there's the testimonials, there's the as featured in, there's the free report, there's the magazine, the store, the events, all of these things that you've clearly been doing it for long enough now. This is not something that happens overnight, and usually it takes time for you to become the best, and you've got all of these proof elements that show that you've been working at this craft and honing it over a long period of time. And that's really how you become the best. You really do focus on one area and just continually develop it and collect the proof. I'm a big advocate, and I've always said, you know, the biggest hurdle that people have to overcome when they're doing business with you online is believing what you say, and for that reason you need to be collecting as much proof as you can along the way, so people just go, yep, they are the go-to guy. Interested to know, I mean, when you're collecting proof and thinking about what you've done in your business, if that's something that's strategically happened, that you've been quite conscious of building, or if it's just kind of happened.
Yeah, I think it has been something that I've done kind of consciously, because a few years ago I met this person and they were kind of coming to me for some business advice, and you know, I was digging deeper into you know, what they do, and their business was kind of struggling. And anyway, after kind of half an hour of talking, they told me everything that they had done, and they were probably in the top five people in what they knew in the world. The top, like top five. There's only a handful of people that know as much as they know and have the expertise and the experience and skills in this particular area. And I said, I would have no idea, because nothing about your website, nothing about any of your materials says how amazing that you are. You know, if you have this stuff, then you need to, you know, you need to show it off. You've got to flaunt it. You know, you need to make sure that you back that all up with all those proof elements that we spoke about. Because if you're that good at what you do, you know, you've got to use that stuff to your advantage. Otherwise, they're going to go to all of your competitors, most of which are completely inferior. And so, you know, you deserve those customers a lot more than somebody else because of the price that you've paid to become as good as what you are. So, yeah, it is a deliberate thing from my part. You know, I know that, you know, having back-end products and having videos on YouTube and, you know, having a YouTube, YouTube channel and having published books and having gotten a lot of PR and having client testimonials and endorsement, you know, being able to get media exposure, all those things do help to build someone's profile and image and help people to make their buying decisions so much easier.
And I mean, that positions you as the best, justifies why you can charge that higher price and go for less customers. Also, by charging that higher price and going for less customers, allows you to really go deep. I mean, you can channel in your target market so tight because there's, you know, you've pretty much become the market leader in that space. So therefore, you can charge the premium price and get all the benefits that run with it. One of the other things that you talked about, which I think a lot of people skip over, and it feels like that's why they get on that treadmill and they're doing the same thing over and over and over. They're going out acquiring new business, and each month it's like they start again. Each month, once it rolls around, they need to get new business in the door to be, you know, putting money in the bank and paying for their overhead expenses. You figured something out early on that sort of makes that whole process easier and makes it easier to grow. I'd love it if you could share that.
So, yeah, so number six is to really to make sure that you're in a business where there's repeat, you know, income or ongoing income, renewable income, royalty income, passive income, whatever you want to call it. Basically, where you get a customer for once and you keep them for life. You know, if you had a choice between two business, one being a pool installation business where you basically sell pools, and another business being a pool cleaning business, I take the pool cleaning business any day of the week, because you might make 10 grand or 15 grand from selling someone a pool, but that's the only money that you're going to make from that customer. Whereas if you're in the pool maintenance business, you might be charging, say $200 per month or something like that for the maintenance of that particular pool. That is 2,000 $400 per year. If you service that client for 10 years, there's $24,000. If you service them for 20 years, then you're looking at close to 50 grand that you've made from just one customer. And so always try to get into a business whereby, you know, there is that going to be that repeat and that that ongoing income. Rather than selling a dog, dog breeding, sell dog food, because it's a consumable product and people need to coming back and they need to become having more and more. If you're a coach or consultant, rather than just selling someone, a product, you can do that to begin with. I sell a number of products, but I also sell an ongoing membership as well to a program that lasts for 12 months. And then in fact, people can stay in that program for years if they like, which means ongoing revenue. So just some questions to ask yourself is, are you in the buy once business or are you in the buy forever business? Because I've been in the buy once businesses before and geez, a cash flow is a major challenge because you're only as successful or only as profitable as your last promotion. And if you had two or three dud promotions, and we all have that in business, you're going to be up against the wall. But if you're in a business whereby people are consuming your product or service every single month, then you've got this baseline of income there, which then protects your business. And so no matter what happens, if you have three or four bad months, it's okay because all of your baseline expenses are covered by that repeat business. So ask yourself that question. I'm in the business or the buy forever business, and try to get into businesses where there is that continuity built in.
I mean, I just love the way that all of these synergistically work together, because it also that feeds into your point number three, that idea of less clients, more money, because you then can start to service existing clients. And you mentioned it, it's that idea that it's 10 times harder to get a new client than it would be just to work with an existing client that you've already sold, that's already bought your product and service, and assuming that you deliver something of great value. They've probably had a great experience with you. So to get that repeat business, and it's often about helping them, just like you talked about in the selling of bundles, where you're thinking about what that dream come true for them would be, and hey, here's all of the things that you want in one package and you'll get at a discount. Similarly, how can you build in that repeat business where we'll make it easy for you, we'll come in and continue to service, or clean your pool or do whatever it is. I mean, some hurdles though that people have to overcome when it comes to repeat business is thinking, how does that fit into sort of my business? I don't know if you've been in a situation where the person's felt like they just haven't had that repeat component. I don't know if you have a way to think about, what additional product or service that they can sell on the back end, because some people just hit that roadblock and go, yeah, but they buy my thing and I'm done.
Yeah, and so what you have to ask yourself, I have another saying, and that is the only marketing genius is your customer. And the secret is find out what your customers want and give it to them. And so ask them, the question when they've bought from you, say, what are your other problems? What are your other challenges? What else do you need help and support with? Listen to them, and they'll kind of they'll tell you. This is what Apple has done. They just sort of sold computers, which is a one-time kind of purchase. But then what they've done is they basically now sell people memberships where you can learn how to use your Apple computer. So for $100 a year or whatever, you can attend lectures and talks and in-store training where you can learn about how to get more value from your Mac. And so they're now getting ongoing income even after the actual purchase. If you install carpet, you might talk to your customers and say, well, what other challenges or things have you got? And somebody might say, well, this carpet, when are you going to replace it? Probably not for another maybe 10 years or so. So you have to wait 10 years before you can sell to them again. You might kind of get into the carpet cleaning business as well. So you can go back every 12 months and clean it. So there's some ongoing income. Or you can talk to that same customer and say, what are some of your other frustrations? And one of my frustrations at the moment is our gutters. We got a lot of trees around our house and every kind of 3 months our gutters are full. So if I had a carpet cleaner, I've got some of the input carpet and says we also do cleaning out gutters as well. If they're, as long as they've done a good job and they've done everything that they've said, of course I'm going to give them a chance and say, well, look, do the gutters, and if it works out, then I'll get you to do it every 3 months. So it's just for listening to your customers and finding out what are their other problems and frustrations and challenges, and then basically have something else that you can offer them. And this is where we talk about, is it diversification? Well, it's not diversification if you're selling to the same customer base. It's actually an extension product. It doesn't really matter what it is. Because you're not having to go out there and create a whole new set of customers for that. You're just basically adding an extra service or an extra product to people that have already bought from you. So it's a natural transition.
I love it. That just makes so much sense when you think about it. I have followed Brad's stuff for the longest of times. In fact, he was probably one of the very first people that I first got interested in when I was looking into this wealth creation industry. And I've never heard that particular distinction, but from business sense, it just makes sense having almost things that dovetail and flow in behind each other and work off the same databases and being able to be marketed to the same person, these extension products. It makes so much business sense. Now, one of the last things, after someone hears a lot of the steps that you've talked about, oftentimes it can trigger all of these different ideas, and there can be that little bit of an overwhelm. I know Rich Sheffrin talked about it. He came up with this thing he called the U diagram, and he was using it to explain when you're building an online business, all of the things that you need to do to be successful. You know, you've got to set up the website, you've got to set up emails, you've got to do pay-per-click, you've got to do SEO, you've got to do the hosting, you've got to do the accounts, you've got to do the legal, and you know, you are right at the center of this diagram, and there are all of these things that need to be done surrounding you, and it just becomes abundantly clear that you can't do it on your own. And I think probably a few of the things that you've talked about here might spur people on and think, oh, you know, that's another thing to add to their to-do list. And I think it's fitting the last business tip that you give sort of helps to solve that. So I don't know if that sort of leads into your last tip.
Yeah, most definitely. And it's one that everybody has heard, you know, 1,000 times before. You know, the way that you bring all of this together is basically by having a great team of other people around you. You've really got to build the team because, you know, in business, there's only 24 hours in the day, and you've got to eat and sleep and have a social life, and you've got a family to look after and other things. And so it's really, really essential that you have a great team of other people around you, because you've got to not, like, you don't have to look at any successful business in the, you know, on the planet. It's not successful just because of the owner. It's achieved. Anything's truly significant is not achieved by one person. It's achieved by a team of people that work together to create something amazing. And so you've always got to be on the lookout for great people, and find a way to be able to share your vision with them about what you want to create, enroll them in that, make it part of their vision as well, and then work together to create something that's extraordinary. So having a great team around you is essential. Just to again summarize, nothing truly significant is accomplished on your own. It's through other people. And you know, the better your team, the more successful you'll become.
When you sort of started building out your business, what was sort of one of the first team members that joined your team?
Well, it was somebody that was kind of I was going to call them a personal assistant. What they were basically assisting me, but I thought probably not that empowering. Some people it would be, but for other people, you know, they want to, you know, have something that's kind of is sort of more standalone. And so I called them a publishing coordinator, because I was publishing 16 books, and so, you know, that even though they were assisting me, they felt like they had some, you know, some responsibility, and that they had a role that was theirs, and they could really, you know, be empowered to actually own it. And so, yeah, that was Emma, and she's been with me for six years, and since then I've employed not a huge team, but you know, six or seven people, in the process of employing a few more as well. So we have a small but very powerful and effective team. And we're now also hiring. We've got one, and we're getting a few more people in the Philippines as well, because you know, it's important to be able to pass off low-level tasks, to people that obviously you're going to be paying much less money to. It's a way that you can be much more productive and efficient in your business. And so that's a lot of fun, and I really love now the love my business, but I love the people that work together as well. And it's an exciting journey.
I mean, sometimes it's hard for people to think about who their next person will be. I mean, I think starting with a personal assistant or some sort of VA that can help with certain repetitive tasks or even just lightening the load with if you've got extra overflow. When you sort of get beyond that first person, which kind of helps, I think the next thing is to try and think about who else to join the team. How did you go about thinking about, when is the right time to add someone and who to look for to help fill specific roles?
Yeah, well, at the moment you can afford it, really. If you're not making much money from your business and not enough to warrant having someone, even someone part-time, then you just got to suck it up and kind of keep going. And we all started there. But the moment that you can afford a part-time person, get a part-time person, but make sure as well that they can be ask them, are you able to go full-time if the work is there and only employs can move from part-time to full-time? Because if they're good, then what they should be doing was within two to 3 months they should be basically giving you enough time back, or helping to grow the business enough to whereby they're now covering their own, paying their own way, meaning they're paying for their salary and they're also now making profit. And the moment you start making some extra income, then pour that back into having that person go full time. And now you've got sort of two people, and you've got this synergistic effect where by, 1 + 1 doesn't equal two, it equals 3 or 4 or 5. And that's sort of what should start to happen when you've got two people with different skill sets that are working to their strengths. And then you just sort of grow from there. Bring on another person and another person, and then you might go, look, hey, and don't just to bring people on for the sake of bringing people on. Sometimes people hire staff just to stroke their own ego and make themselves look important. So I've resisted hiring staff for many, many years because I don't want to have a big team, because not only is it expensive to have a big team, but it also does provide, it does kind of hold you back as far as it just weighs you down, because then all of a sudden you need to have, you're sort of running like an adult daycare center, basically. Every day someone's having a drama in some area of their life and just slows you down. So the smaller you can keep your team, the better. But saying that, you do need to make sure that you have enough hands on deck, because if your business does go through a busy time, you want to make sure you can capitalize on that, and you want to make sure that you're servicing your clients, because if they don't get looked after, they're not going to stay, and if they don't stay, then you're not going to have a long-term business.
Some really good insights there. I think the keeping the team lean. I know you can still build up a significant size business with a lean team. I think the 37 Signals guys, they did Basecamp. They're a great example of that, and I think they might have even talked about that in one of their books, Rework. This idea of the importance of having the team, but really keeping it lean, so that way sort of everybody's quite accountable. It's all hands on deck, and it's very easy to change direction if you need to. Typically, the larger you get, the slower you move. So I think that's good. In the tail end, it'd be interesting to see if we can to take those 7 steps that you've talked about. And again, this is something that I like about your style, is this idea of leading by example. I don't know if we can almost just to recap, go through the 7 steps and talk about how you've applied those in your business. So, I mean, you've identified that target market, which, I mean, you seem to help sort of small, medium-sized business. I don't know if we could go through those.
Well, one through quickly in context of my own business. Number one, find a hungry crowd. My market is small to medium-sized business owners, and there's like probably 1.2 million small business owners, and so the market is huge. And also, small business owners you know, they understand, you know, about investing in themselves and their business, because if they don't, and they're going to basically be out of business pretty soon. So any business owner, you know, it's a no-brainer when you can say, look, here's the cost, you know, pay me $1,000 and I'll make you $10,000, and here's how I'll do that. It's, you know, it's a no-brainer, and any business owner that goes pay $1,000, make $10,000 goes, you know, where do I sign? So it's a big crowd, and it's a hungry crowd, because they're looking to grow, and they're looking to achieve more success. And that's exactly what I help them to do, is to make more money and become more successful. Number two, go deep, not wide. You know, I've written a lot of books, and 16 different books about a whole lot of different subjects, about stock market and property and public speaking and small business. And I've done another one on inspiring women. And I've done so many different books. I've gone very, very broad, but I ended up creating these little kind of databases of people that are interested in stock market, and people that are interested in health, and people that are interested in property, and people that are interested in business. And I'd made a bit of money from, but where the real money is made is by going deep and not going wide, because now you have to go, well, how am I going to service, you know, all these 15 or 16 different markets that I created? And so what I decided back about 3 years ago, okay, I'm going to pick one area that I'm most passionate about, which was business. And rather than kind of going broad, stop going broad and stop producing, you know, books on other topics, and go deep. And so that's where I developed a more of a back-end program. I surveyed all the people that had read my books and say, what else do you want? They told me what they wanted, and I created a product that helped them to solve that problem that they had. And obviously now it's, you know, my product is a high-end product. I've got two different levels, one that's $8,000 a year and one that's $12,000 a year. And so that leads me to my next one, which is less clients, more money. You know, in the fact of, if you want to make $1 million and you sell something for $1, you have to sell a million of them to make $1 million. If you've got something that's $10, you only have to sell 100, you have to sell 100,000. If you've got something for $100, you only have to sell 10,000. If you've got something for $1,000, you only have to sell 1,000. If you've got something for $10,000, you only have to sell 100. And so much easier to sell 100 or 1,000 of something, as opposed to sell 1 million of something. That's pretty tough to do, you know, in a population of, say, $20 to $21 million. It's really hard. So that's why, if you're charging more money for something, and you naturally you're gonna you only need to attract less clients, and you can create the same result, and also you'll have less headaches. I'd rather satisfy 100 clients as opposed to keeping 100,000 clients happy. How much administration would I have to do to manage 100,000 clients? Would be, you know, I'd need a team of hundreds of staff and huge overheads and big offices, to make such little money per customer. Much rather, much smaller infrastructure, work less customers, because I've got less headaches and less administration, less of everything, but charging a lot more money. And another thing on that is, it takes the same amount of effort, I've found, to sell a little product as what it does to sell a big product. So if you want to become successful, start selling bigger products or bigger services, and you'll become more successful. Number four, selling bundles. I, you know, have not hundreds, but I have dozens of books. I've got, like, you know, 24, so 16 books that I've written. I've got a whole bunch of other books from other people that I've sold on my website from time to time. And you know, having all these products, I think, oh, giving people more choice, I was actually making their life harder and not even knowing it. And at the same time, I was then making, you know, my life, you know, my business was kind of suffering, because if you give people too many choices, they don't end up picking one, they pick none, because overwhelmed. And so what I do now is, I've got one product, two levels, gold and platinum, that's it. And I spend hardly any time selling my books now. I spend all of my time selling one core product. That's it. And, you know, making more money than I ever have before, with doing all these other things. Number five, you know, becoming the best. I've spent, you know, years and years and years, you know, learning about business and studying, you know, search engine optimization, or studying things like, you know, social media or video marketing or outsourcing or email marketing, etc. And so I've invested a lot of time, a lot of effort, to learn about all these different subjects and to become the best, you know, and know as much as I can all these things. Number six is look for a repeat. So, you know, I sell a product, which is then people can either pay for it upfront if they want to, or they can pay for it in monthly installments. But it's a 12-month program, so I make a sale once, people stay with me for a minimum of 12 months. But because the product is so good and people love it so much, and I deliver a huge value in that first 12 months, about 70% of my clients stay on board for the second year, and now many clients are rolling into a third year with me. And so that is proof of the look for repeat, get a customer once, keep them for life. And number seven, building a great team. I've done that before, and I'm certainly not, speaking as, it's all me, because it's certainly not me. I've got a great team of people around me, including my wife, that does all the administration and also the account side of things. And then I've got Emma, who's our general manager, and I've got Andy and Naomi and Richard and a number of other great team members. And so, none of my, I don't claim any of my own successes. It's all me. It's certainly not. You've got a great, the more great people you have around you, the more successful you become. So sorry for kind of rambling a bit at the
No, not at all.
it was good to just summarize and also give you context of how these principles have, rung true in my own business journey.
I mean, there's a reason I asked you that question, and it's that idea. I can see it in the different pieces throughout the business, the idea that you're leading from example, which I absolutely love. I think that's the only way to do business, and it shows that you're practicing what you preach. And you see it in the different elements of what you do. And what I like most about these tips is they're all incredibly strong, big rocks. When you think about them, each one is just as important as the next. When you first hear all of them, you might think, oh, wow, that's going to be a lot to try and implement and start to apply. Just you talked about it in the presentation, the idea of just picking off a few and then finding the two that resonate most with you. Start with those and start to build them out. But from what I've seen in business and businesses that work, and what I've seen that works in my own business, those seven principles are very solid and very sound. And I think someone who's listening to this might go, hey, I want to find out a little bit more. If they did want to find out more about your work, Dale, what's the best place for them to head to?
Well, the main hub that I have is called businessblueprint.com.au. So you can go there and you can find out a little bit more about our business. Rather than saying, though, the big kind of product that we have, we run a free event, which is just designed to give away as much information as we can. If people want to continue with us, then they can. If people just want to come for the free information, that's totally fine too. So that the event that we run, the free event right across Australia and New Zealand, is called New Rules of Business. And so you can head to the website, which is the same name, newrulesofbusiness.com.au. That's probably the best place to start your journey with us, is to come along to one of those free events. We run them in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Auckland, Perth, and Adelaide. So come along and come up and say hi and say, hey, listen to the interview with Dave and yourself, and so it'd be good to be able to connect with you personally. So come up and say hi. It'd be great to see you.
Fantastic. Very much appreciated, Dale. We might wrap it up there. I really appreciate your time. I know you're incredibly busy and you've got a lot of things going on, and you've been very generous with the ideas and also your time. So we thank you for that. And no doubt people want to find out a little bit more. You can head over to Dale's website, the businessblueprint.com.au. And if you need any help or want to find out more tips like these and interviews, you can head over to melbourneseoservices.com. Thanks, Dale.
Yeah, thank you. Great chatting. All the best. We'll catch you soon.